why is this important? Because it wasn't like at that time, my intuition told me like, this is not going to work out. This is not going to work out. But I like overrode it. I was like, no, I really want this because I want the title and I want to prove myself. And I, you know, I want all these things and show people, look at me. And then it just, my whole identity just like blew up. And I had to figure out, I had to go really deep inside myself to find out. If you had asked me what success is back then, I would have not been able to answer because I had lost my way because I was chasing that external so much. So I had to go back inside and find that.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Adepia DiRico is an investor, advisor, and author. She is a principal and the VP of strategy at Alpha Investing, a real estate private capital network that connects investors to highly vetted commercial real estate opportunities. She is a respected fintech entrepreneur who helped bring the real estate crowdfund industry into the mainstream, and she has also published a book, Productive Intuition, Connecting to the Subtle. Adepia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. So great to be here.
The pleasure is mine. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you quickly tell us where did you start, where are you now, and how you got there?
So super started when I was 18. I started working in a bank, very ambitious. I knew financial freedom was one of my values. I have had a over 20 year career of getting to what I imagined was success, and it looks totally different. So started there and currently a principal at a private equity firm. So just amazing the way life takes you to your goal, you know, in a way. So that's where I started and that's where I am.
That's fantastic. Break some of that down for us. You said that it looks differently today than what you had imagined. What does that mean?
Yeah. So if you can imagine, so I'm 18 and I thought that success for me in the financial industry was I was going to be on Wall Street. You know, I was like, that's what we had as role models, you know? So like, that's what I thought success was that life, the city life, the briefcase, the suits, the, you know, that like literally that's what I thought. And what it is, you know, what it is now is just so much control over my life because I've managed through a lot of ups and downs and losses to come to a place of stability financially and to not feel like that can just evaporate and be taken away. So I feel more in control of where I am and it's on my terms. Like I'm a partner in a firm. I work from home now. I'm in real estate. So it doesn't look like what I thought it was, but the values that are there and the way I wanted to feel, which was confident, independent, and secure, those are all there.
That's awesome. I love that. I'm kind of rewriting some of the parts of this podcast, like the guest guide and things. And that's one of the questions I was actually rewriting not 20 minutes ago, which is, you know, the question was success and what does it mean for you to be successful? And I think you just defined that success is control over your life. And then you define the parameters for what that looks like for you. I think that's interesting. I mean, those aren't things that we probably have the maturity at 18 to understand.
No, I mean, at 18, we're still very much. I mean, the generation that we're from, maybe 18-year-olds today are very different, but that was the world there of like, I need to prove myself. I need to push myself. I need to compete. I need to make it. And it's within these parameters that are very much, they're kind of imposed, right? Like what I thought was success wasn't my version of success. It's what I thought I should want. And so that's what I went for. And what I learned along the way in all of these years was that my heart was always in the right place. So the values that I had were of primary importance. And that's how I got around to this success is because my values and my intention was always the same. And I've just managed to shape a life that's more aligned to my values and my intentions.
Was there a point in your journey in which you felt like you weren't honoring those values or intentions?
Oh my goodness. So many times. Yeah. So many times. I would say the most recent, like the really big one was in 2017 when I was in the fintech industry. I was at a second startup as a COO. I was commuting to San Francisco from LA. Like you had the title. I had a lot of like fanciness. My ego thought this, I had something to prove. I still had something to prove. And I actually burnt out I actually realized like I was so burnt out from so many years of being in the startup space and like go, go, go and doing all these things. And that burnout actually led to an awakening for me where I really woke up and said, like, what am I doing with my life right now? Like, what am I going for? And why is this important? Because it wasn't like at that time, my intuition told me like, this is not going to work out. This is not going to work out. But I like overrode it. I was like, no, I really want this because I want the title and I want to prove myself. And I, you know, I want all these things and show people, look at me. And then it just, my whole identity just like blew up. And I had to figure out, I had to go really deep inside myself to find out. If you had asked me what success is back then, I would have not been able to answer because I had lost my way because I was chasing that external so much. So I had to go back inside and find that. So yeah, I've had several like moments. That one was the big one.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. I know that's probably a vulnerable golly period, you know, and to be honest about that is, yeah, that's super, super important. I appreciate you sharing that. What were some of the keys or some of the things that were, you know, that you said, hey, I'm going to redefine or define what values and intentions are for me. And here's how I'm going to honor them going forward. How did that happen?
Yeah. So it happened basically just being in like the darkest place of my life. Like, if you will, I didn't know who I was anymore. I've never not been able to be some level of success at work. Like, I've always worked really hard. I've always been ambitious. I've put in more time, more effort. And so I've always been able even to jump in jobs and places. I've never not been able to make something work.
Right.
That wasn't working. Even though by all accounts, I should have been able to make it work. I knew exactly what I was doing, but it wasn't working. And I couldn't, you know, with my mind, I was like, this has to work. Why isn't it working? And then I left. And then I thought I would do some other things that were more aligned. So I went into, you know, I wanted to be a coach for women, because when that happened is when Me Too happened. And so then I thought, oh, there's my purpose. I'm a successful woman, like executive. I need to do more with my life. I need to help people. And so I thought, oh, I would be a coach and I would do speaking and I would do like other things and completely abandon this business career that at that point was 20 years. And so the coaching stuff, that wasn't working either. And then I got really upset. Like, I got really upset at like the universe or God. And I was like, I literally thought if you follow your heart and your purpose, then you should succeed. Like, very naive, right? Very naive. And it wasn't working. And I had a massive breakdown because I wasn't making money. I had a house under construction. You know, I had a husband who was like, didn't understand what was happening to me. I didn't understand what was happening to me. And I basically just had this breakdown. And I said, like, what is going on? And like, what am I supposed to learn and understand? And so I spent a lot of time kind of just on my own, like really like internally on my own, like asking myself and going through a lot of emotions. And then at some point in that process, I did a lot of like spiritual seeking. In that process, I came to understand that I love business. And I had to admit that to myself, because what I did when I left was I made the person that I was bad in a way, right? I was like, oh, you're a bad person. You were in it for the wrong reasons. So I judged myself. And then I told myself somehow, I convinced myself that I could never go back to business. And so I created my own closed door in terms of opportunities, right? I was like, well, I can never go back. And I don't even know why I made that decision, but I did. And then when I realized to myself, when I was willing to admit to myself that I loved business and I didn't want to be a coach, and then I would have to tell all these people that I told I was going to be a coach. So it's just ego that didn't want to like admit that I couldn't succeed. So once I got over myself, I was able to kind of receive from my inner place, if you will, like I call it my higher self, that like, hey, you love business, you love investing, you love real estate, you love all this kind of stuff. And your heart has always been in the right place. So in a way, I had to forgive myself and let it be okay that I am who I am. And as soon as I did that, then all these things started to fall into place, including meeting my partners where I'm at right now at Alpha Investing. And everything just started to fall into place. And it was all because I took the time to go in and actually do an inventory of what my values were, of what I was grateful for and what I wanted.
That's incredible. Yeah. And that period of introspection is in today's busy life is not one that is widely talked about. But, you know, I know many, you know, including myself that have taken that time and you go, oh, this is incredibly valuable. Not just once, but repeatedly. Is that part of your book, Productive Intuition, Connecting to the Subtle? Is that, I've not read the book. So, you know, give us a little background on that and maybe, you know, tell us if that story ties in.
It does. So the book is basically the book that I needed when I was going through this burnout and this awakening, because I didn't know who to talk to in my like colleague business network. I thought people would think I was like gone crazy. You know, it was like, who talks about like not knowing who I am anymore? And like, I would try to talk to some people and that experience was really bad. Like the response was sort of what I was most afraid of. And so I lost a lot of people in my life at that time too, because they just couldn't understand and I couldn't understand. So I just had a lot of shedding. And so when I decided to write the book, I wrote it because after all these years, so like, you know, 4 years of really deep seeking and putting myself back together, I learned a lot about not just my intuition, because my intuition was something that I thought wasn't real, or I thought that, you know, the mind is more important, which is not true at all. I mean, our intuition is so important. And so I wrote a book basically about what I learned kind of waking up, and not just like spiritual waking up, but just normal, like realizing that it's really important to go inside. And so I wrote the kind of the book of that journey that I went on, what I learned about myself and kind of working through the introspective process and some of the things that I did to figure out in a way like who I am and why I'm here. So big life questions that I was able to answer. And then the third one is like how I want to show up in the world. So that's the nexus of the book. And I take the angle of intuition because it's one of those things that in our rational, left, linear, you know, Western kind of society is like, it is thought to be the be all and end all is how we think. And really how we think is like the last thing in line. You know, thinking is not knowing. It's very different. And so the book is sort of a journey for everyone to connect with that part of themselves and be able to make better decisions, because they're not just going to think themselves out of what they know.
Yeah, that's a great point. Even inside of the real estate side of things, I mean, that's a very applicable skill set, because there's so many places you can go in this business. There's so many different angles you can take. There's so many different ways to get involved with so many different people, and some may fit and some in your heart of hearts may be the absolute wrong move.
Right. Yeah. Like you get a feeling about people, right? Like the number one thing with investing is like who you invest with, like, especially if you're an LP, like if you're the GP, then it's also like who you work with. But as an LP, as an investor, like, you know, who your sponsor is, like who your partners are so very, very important. And if you have a bad feeling about somebody, it doesn't mean like walk away right now, but it does mean like do a little digging, ask more questions, explore it a little bit more and really experience people. Here's the thing about intuition. It's not just like some random thing that like hits your mind. A lot of it is very experienced. People will walk into a building and they've seen hundreds of these kinds of deals before, and they can just off the cuff, they can know whether it's good or not. That's also kind of their intuition, because they're drawing on all of this embedded knowledge that they have, and they can have an instant sense. This is a yes or no. And then they can make decisions based on that with the analytics. So it's always like the two things like working together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's interesting about that, you know, I think if any of us were honest, from personal experience, I'd say I've never overridden my intuition and had it turn out well. Right? Mm-hmm. Like how many times we walked in and you're like, no, but this is a good deal. I mean, look, everything checks, like the boxes all tick. Like, yeah. Like go down your typical analytic checklist and you go, man, this is great on paper. And I've said yes before and gone, oh, crud.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. You have so much awareness. That's amazing. Yeah. Like, and when we override our intuition, when it says no, or it says wait, or it says like, check on that a little bit more in the mind, and the analytic is like, no, no, no. Look, I can change the assumption, and there's what I want, right? And like, you can make the numbers say anything. So it's like, you know, it's like using both. So I agree. Like, every time I didn't listen to my intuition when it was saying no, worst deals of my life, like worst experiences of my life, and when I've not listened. And then I remember listening to Barbara Corcoran in a Clubhouse room earlier this year, and she said all her best deals were not good on paper, but her intuition said they'd be good deals. And I thought, yes, Barbara.
Yeah, that's a tough, I mean, I don't want to put all weight in one category or the other, but I would understand that to a point, because, you know, there are times when you just know, it's like, wait, yeah, move forward with that. Hit the buy button. This makes sense. I can't define it, but this is good. And I can't think of actually any situation where I've had that, maybe to Barbara's point, you know, in which it has not turned out positively. So that's really interesting. Just using that sense we've been given in a practical manner. How have you defined, or how have you built the role that you're in now to really meet those values that you have?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's alignment with my partners, and basically just coming to an agreement and an understanding of what I want to do, what my strengths are, and what my weaknesses are. Like, I know myself very well, and I know what I'm good at, and I know what I'm not good at. And so matching that with each other. So I'm not the underwriter. Right. We have an incredible head of underwriting. And so that's not what I do. That is not my strong suit. Like, I work more on the investor side and the business development side. So I don't do the underwriting. I'm really good over here at the positioning and the investor relations and the communications. And so we know that about each other. And that doesn't mean that I don't take time to, let's say, like, learn more about the underwriting or get into it. But the amount of time it's going to take me to underwrite something versus Anne is completely different. And if we were to switch roles and Anne had talked to the investors, I mean, so the way that we find it, I believe, is also being really open and that kind of like admitting, if you will, like, I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm not. I know what I prefer to do, what I would prefer not to do, and matching that out. So a lot of things need to be delegated to associates or external firms that we work with, so that I'm not bogged down, or anyone, doing the things that they're not best suited at doing and that make us more efficient by outsourcing. So it's knowing yourself, being honest with yourself and others, and then finding alignment with people who are willing to meet you there. And then everybody works as a cohesive team.
Yeah, that's a great point. And how do you feel like someone can do that? You know, if let's assume this person is out looking to join a firm, such as maybe what you're doing, but maybe doesn't have the background you do, or can't command that, hey, these are the things I'm good at, the things I'm not good at. How do I fit into your firm? How does someone responsibly communicate those things, maybe on a pre-joining a team basis?
Yeah, I think you can still do that too. I can't speak today either.
Contagious, sorry.
Wow. So I believe that still can be done on a different level. I think humility is really important, along with believing in yourself and being willing to try, right? Like, if I know I'm not good at something, but it's part of the job, then I'm going to try hard. It's going to just take me a little longer to figure that part out. It's going to be a little bit more of a struggle than doing something that comes more easily to me. But I would say if somebody's in a junior position and coming in, like, being really honest, because people will ask you, like, what are your weaknesses? And, you know, there's like you might say something that's like false humility. Like, oh, you know, like one of my weaknesses is that I try too hard or something like that. No, be really honest, and then be willing to say that you will work and do it. That you will work hard at something that you need to work on and actually do it. You know, I still have to do a lot of things that don't come naturally to me. And it's a really important part of my growth every single day. So I think the willingness to put in the time and the effort goes a really long way. And then at a certain point, you start to know your stuff, and that work that you put in really pays dividends for you.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about your role as an investor relation, or your role on investor relations. What does that look like? What are some things that you really enjoy about it? And what are some things, you know, that you find are challenging?
Yeah. So in the role, sort of like overseeing it and managing it. So it's everything from marketing all the way down to having the conversations with investors. So a lot of it is strategic, which is something I'm very good at. The little details are not my strong suit at all. So this I know about myself. So I have systems set up to help me with things like details, like calendaring and you know, things like that, that like I often am known to not be able to set up my own meetings, you know, hence things like Calendly. So there's ways, right, where it's like, okay, I'm not very good at this, so I'm going to use this to help me. But what I love about the role is I really believe in what we do, and we're very good at what we do. So that is easy for me to speak to, because when I'm passionate about something, that comes through. I'm like an evangelist. And so people connect with me, and that's a natural thing I don't even have to try to do, so to speak, because I really show up authentically. If I don't know the answer to something, I will tell you. I'm not going to tell you, here's all of our best deals and here's our best returns. I'm actually going to tell you, here's our worst deals, here's all the risks, here's everything. And so the connecting with people, investors, understanding what their goals are, and having an honest conversation, if what we do is a good fit for them, for the kind of investor we're looking for, because we're not an open network. So, and that's sometimes the hardest, because I really want everyone to have a passive income portfolio. And sometimes the hardest thing is like having a conversation with somebody and they're not a good fit for us because they don't have the investment minimums that we're looking for, or they really don't understand the risk. And so we, for their own good, and for ours, like we just can't work with everybody. And so that makes me a little sad, but I know that I can direct them elsewhere, right? If we're not the right group, I can direct them to multiple places. Maybe they start there. Maybe they come back to us one day. So those are like, it's the good and the bad, so to speak, go together. And it's in the connecting with people.
Right. That's great. I love that. Let's zoom out a little bit further and talk about the company as a whole. What are you guys investing in now? And where do you see us in this, you know, in this economy, in this kind of state of things here? I guess we're recording this, what, October 19th, 2021. So let's talk about your company a little bit, and then what you guys see the macroeconomic picture looking like.
Sure. So Alpha Investing is private equity. So we come in as LP, usually sole LP or majority LP. We're writing anywhere from like $5 to $10 million checks. We invest in Class B workforce, multifamily, senior housing, and single family rental portfolios. So we partner with operators who have $1 billion or more of track record. So bigger operators where we can come in with that seven figure check that an individual would otherwise have to come in with a seven figure check. So that's what we're investing in. The move into single family rental is part of the overall thesis that we have on the markets and what we're seeing in multifamily, the opportunity we're seeing in single family rental. So where 50% of multifamily is owned by institutions, only 1 or maybe 2% of single family rental is owned by institutions, and they've been making a push into that asset class. COVID along with demographic shifts have accelerated the way that people want to live. And they don't all want to live in multifamily units, they want homes. And so there's a lot of demand in the single family space, like whether it's rental or build to rent. But basically that has also been underbuilt for decades, right? We don't have the supply in multifamily or in senior housing, senior housing too, but single family. So we like that for the yields and the cap rates as like relative to certain Class B multifamily. So that's a push we're making. And within the larger macroeconomic environment, when I read and follow economists, what it seems, and I would also believe this is my opinion, is that we're going to be in an asset inflationary period for the next several years. I mean, we haven't seen the stimulus money hit the economy yet, and it's going to hit in the next 2 to 3 years. So basically, like, the concept is invest in what is scarce, invest in assets, because that is what is going to be rising. I think it's the most important time to be an asset investor, to not rely only on wage growth or just wages. So for those who can start to invest in real estate, even a little bit, it's going to go a really long way.
That's a really succinct way of putting that. Be an asset investor. That's, you know, obviously we talk about that a lot on this show, but I like the way you've said that. That's really great. Fantastic. I've really enjoyed this. I've got two more questions for you, and then we will jump into the final four. Definition. Can you define the word impact for me? And what kind of impact do you believe you have on other people?
Oh, wow. How do I define impact? So, because I love that word, I think about is impact investing, which is sort of a version of, I think impact is like, it's almost like an indelible, like a mark that you leave, like you make an impact. It's something that leaves a mark. And so I believe that we do that by showing up authentically as who we are. I think that's the biggest impact that we can make on people. Like you mentioned, I'm very vulnerable or very open. That's how I want to make an impact. I want to share and spread this idea that we should always be open and be ourselves, because it's a lot more, we're more successful when we're ourselves and when we try really hard to like put on this mask of who we think we should be. And that makes an impact on the world, because I give you permission to be who you are. And then you, and everybody does it to everyone else. And it just, we're kinder. We want each other to succeed. And that to me is true impact.
Right. I love that. Goals. If you can define the word goals for us, and what is a goal that you've achieved, and what did you do when you achieved it?
Okay. Yeah. So a goal is an outcome that you decide that you want, essentially. Like a goal is an outcome that you're going to achieve. It can be very defined. Like I would say, like my goal of financial freedom that I had when I was 18 looks different than what I thought it was when I was 18, but the goal is still the same. So there's an element of like having a goal, but being open to how you get there and to what it ultimately looks like. So that's how I would define goal. And then I forgot the second part of the question.
What did you do when you achieved it?
Oh, so I'm getting a lot better at this part, because usually when I achieve it, I would tend to not celebrate it and just be like, okay, what, you know, I can't stop. What's next? What's next? What's next? That's how I got burnt out. So I have to be a lot better at really practicing like celebration. It's like celebrating that and honoring it, like really honoring that goal and what it took to get there, and living from a full cup instead of a, like, there's still more. Of course there is, life doesn't stop, and enjoy what you've got. So that's one of my practices that I'm working on.
That's awesome. And that's a harder practice for those of you who are listening that haven't tried that. That's a much harder practice than it sounds, is to celebrate your wins, to acknowledge them, and even try to internalize. That's very difficult, actually. So kudos to you for doing that. Final four questions here for you. What is the most important lesson you have learned in the last year?
So I think the most important lesson that I've learned in the past year is that the work that I put into learning technical investing and underwriting, like I said, the stuff that I'm not really good at, that was totally worth it, because I understand fundamental technicals at a time when it's more important than ever to do so. So that's been a big lesson for me, like getting over my resistance to doing that thing that I was telling myself and other people I'm not good at, because it's not my strength, but I'm really, really glad that I got over it and learned it and continue to learn it and put in the effort.
That's awesome. Question number two, if you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
So I think a number one mistake is FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. Oh my God, this deal, I got to get in on this deal. It looks like such a good deal. It's just like, take your time, like stop chill out. There will always be another deal. Always be another deal. And it's so exciting. I want to invest in everything. I want to invest in everyone because I want everyone to succeed and I want them to succeed. That is not smart investing. So I would say if you feel a sense of urgency, that you really need to notice that and notice where that comes from and just stop. Like maybe you need more time to evaluate a deal. Ask for that time if you can and be willing to say, hey, I can't look at this. I don't have the time to really do my due diligence and walk away. There will always be another deal.
Right. That's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I am investing in female founders and diverse founders through a women's venture capital group as an LP.
That's awesome. Very good. Very good. Last question for you. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, find out about your book or Alpha Investing, what is the best way to do that?
Find me on LinkedIn. That is where I spend most of my time to connect with me. So just type in my first name, Adapia, A-D-A-P-I-A. Hit me up with a DM. And we know you heard me on Sam's podcast and we'll connect there. And then you can find me online too. But number one way is LinkedIn.
Fabulous. Adapia, thank you so much. It was a great show. Appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.